Welcome to Connect with Encompass Health. I'm your host, Mary Ellen DeBartolaben, National Director of Quality at Encompass Health. Our Connect podcast is designed to help inspire and motivate healthcare professionals with insightful information from our industry experts. In this season of Connect, we're focusing on lessons in leadership. We'll be talking with some of Encompass Health's top executives. How did they grow their careers, overcome obstacles, and lead teams to growth? Let's find out. In this episode, we'll be talking with Renee Tyree, Encompass Health's Director of Pharmacy for our West region. Renee and I go back a long way, and I've had the privilege of learning from her and about her over the years. Renee, you've worked in healthcare for almost 30 years, but you were very familiar with the system and processes well before you became a pharmacist. Tell us about your first memories of healthcare.
My experiences with healthcare started in a real personal way with family. My brother was born with cerebral palsy. And so my entrance into healthcare and just seeing how the system worked, even though I was a youngster, you know, I was certainly impacted by that, impacted by caregiving, access to healthcare, insurance companies. And it certainly, you know, forms my memory of how things worked, even though I didn't have an understanding as a young child. And then personally, I ended up with an illness when I was 7 years old. And so that was very personal. And that was really my first entry into rehabilitation. I became paralyzed at a young age at seven due to Guillain-Barré syndrome and an autoimmune condition. And part of that whole experience was rehabilitation. I ended up leaving school and having to be homeschooled at that time. And I have memories of with my therapist riding a tractor as therapy, as one of those little pedal bikes, up and down the halls of a hospital as a little kid, you know, as seven. And so that was my official entry personally into the field of rehabilitation.
Let's fast forward a few years, and you were going to college and you wanted to be a doctor.
I did. So another life event for me happened when I was 19. As a lot of folks know, with Guillain-Barré, there is recovery, which I did recover when I was seven and had, you know, a very full and active life, involved in sports and running and track and cross country and all the other things that a kid does growing up. Unfortunately, then when I was 19, I was in college and had a very similar disease or illness reoccurrence, autoimmune mediated. And I was in that time in school going to be a physician. That was my goal in life. And I was volunteering and being a medical assistant in emergency medicine. And that really was what I thought my path was going to be until I had this another life-altering event and became paralyzed again and became ultimately a full-time wheelchair user. So again, I had another rehab experience. So my life is full of rehab experiences. It's just really, really really great, actually. But, you know, through that course of becoming paralyzed and being in the hospitals and going to transitioning to rehabilitation hospitals, I was really discussing, you know, my future after going home, and as we do with our patients now and many of our conversations, how they go is, you know, what, you know, getting people back to work and, you know, all the different things that they have planned for their lives. And in this case, you know, clearly we were talking about, you know, how, you know, I was going to pursue my path of being a physician. And at that time, you know, as I said, it was in the 80s. This was prior to Americans with Disabilities Act. And there wasn't all this level of accommodation and understanding and the context of, yeah, we can figure this out and, you know, make this happen. So at that time, I was pretty much told, no, you cannot do that. And that's not going to be a possibility. So, and me, you know, not knowing any different, this is a whole new experience of both life-changing and physically and all the different adjustments that you do going through an event like this, you know, I didn't know to say no. And so I believed that. And that's really when, you know, my life shifted in where, you know, where I saw myself and what I was going to school for, and then where I was going to ultimately end up and what was I going to do.
Do you think that type of situation would happen today?
I don't. Not on the same level, I should say that. I do think, you know, even today, there's experiences for all people with disabilities that encounter some levels of discrimination or, you know, saying, no, that's not possible. I think what's really different is, you know, the laws and the visibility to, you know, ADA, and there's, you know, there's a different conversation in the world today than there was then. So I don't think there would be the category of saying, no, you can't do that. But I think there would be, you know, there still exists some level of hesitation of hows. I often get asked these questions from other folks who are individuals with disabilities who are looking to go into pharmacy. And I end up mentoring, you know, people in different states. There's a woman that I've been communicating with that was referred to me, who's in California, who is working at another rehabilitation hospital, ironically, not our company, and is really having challenges with access and, you know, and how to, the world of saying yes to how to make this possible. And so I don't think, to answer your question, that it's not outside the world of happening, but it's just the how, and it's a lot more subtle.
So you got pushback about continuing on that path, but you still wanted to stay in healthcare. So what happened next?
Yeah. So I was really committed to that. You know, I was a junior in college at the time. I was pursuing this pre-med degree and I had all these courses. You know, it's like, so a disability or X life event happens and you just don't automatically have a brain transplant and your whole personality and being doesn't change. So I really started looking at exploring what could I do and what were options. And I actually had a family member, distant family member, who is a pharmacist. And I don't exactly recall how this all transpired, but eventually we got to considering what about pharmacy. So that was how the path came up.
So from there, Renee, you moved from Wisconsin to Arizona.
Yeah, I did, which, you know, if you think about it, I mean, that's a major life change, both in geography and temperatures and, you know, just 2,000 miles away from your family and everything else. So, you know, when I was really looking at the career path of pharmacy, I also had to really look at how I navigated in the world, you know, and so Wisconsin, where I grew up, had a lot of physical barriers. Reality is, you know, we had a lot of snow, we had ramps that were piled full of snow, and the cold wasn't good for me. And the other event that happened along this exploration was that I contacted some pharmacy schools in the state of Wisconsin at that time. And again, like I said, it was prior to ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act. And basically the responses were, oh, we don't think you could do this, or it's not accessible, basically, and good luck. So
that really,
again, this wouldn't happen today.
That's really so cringy.
It is cringy. There's a lot of things that are cringy. And, you know, I look back at this and just really think, you know, wow.
And you just accepted it at the time. Like
at the time you accept it because, and you know, you accept a lot of things. And even today you accept things because you pick your battles, you pick, okay, what's going to be the most valuable, you know, where do you want to place your energy? And then, you know, what I know now is completely different than what I knew then clearly. But, you know, when in this exploration, I started looking at universities and colleges outside of the state of Wisconsin at that time. And I came upon the University of Arizona. Clearly the weather was a factor and just the accessibility and the overall navigation opportunities and ease at the campus. And so my parents, we drove out, you know, 2,000 miles, and they were really impressed with the University of Arizona and their campus and their disability student resources and all of those things, that they felt comfortable, so to speak, of leaving their daughter and saying, hey, see you later. You don't know anybody. And, you know, thought that it would all work out. And it did.
So you said that your whole being and personality doesn't change with a disability. And part of your personality was being an athlete. So how did that progress when you were in Arizona?
Sure. So I naturally gravitated to other folks with disabilities who were participating in sports, which was a whole world that I hadn't been exposed to prior to moving to Arizona. The University of Arizona started a disability adaptive sports program. It was very, you know, small compared to today and what's going on at the campus, but I really enjoyed that. I mean, I really got exposed to, there was track, there was basketball, there was rugby, there were all these different sports. So that piqued my interest.
And so at some point you picked a sport and got really good at it.
That I did. And yes. So I started out with rugby just because my physical abilities hadn't fully, you know, I didn't have the strength and the endurance. I started with rugby, but ultimately ended up with wheelchair basketball. And at that time, there was not a women's team to play with and practice with and compete with. And so I was a member of the University of Arizona men's wheelchair basketball team. And I was able
trailblazing.
Yes, it was trailblazing. And you know what? It really made me a better athlete and a better player because I had to keep up. I had to keep up with the boys, and I had to, you know, be tough and just really, you know, demonstrate that I deserve to be on that team and deserve to be on the floor with them. And my competitive nature clearly came out. Yeah.
Let's talk about how you got noticed to go onto the national scene.
Yeah. So it was out of playing with the men's basketball team, and there were competitions in different cities and travel. And then I was, so to speak, noticed by some coaches who said, oh, we have a women's team in Texas and we would like you to play. So I was able to initially start playing with a women's team. I could play on both. That's the way the rules were. So if there wasn't a women's team, you could play on a women's team somewhere else. So I was a fly-in. So they flew me into Texas to play. And then ultimately we played at the national tournament in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And that was where I really think, you know, I got discovered, or I attribute my discovery to the U.S. women's wheelchair basketball coach was there. And at that tournament, I won, I don't know, just about every award that there was and didn't even know that there was to win. And so that was really the kickoff of my wheelchair basketball career. And within a year, I was on my first U.S. women's team competing in England. And then the year after that, my first Paralympic women's wheelchair basketball team, U.S. in Barcelona, Spain.
So how many Olympics did you play?
I've played and competed in three and medaled in all three. First was a silver in Barcelona, a bronze in Atlanta, and then a gold in Athens, Greece. So I ended my career and retired after Athens, after, you know, having competed on three real successful teams and full complement of medals. Yeah.
So, Renee, where are your Olympic medals hanging right now?
You don't want to ask me this question. So this is, I knew you would ask me this question. So they are nicely protected in a drawer in my bedroom. I did recently have them out. I was just recently inducted into the Hall of Fame at the University of Arizona, and they wanted my medals.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I brought my medals and for that event. And so they've been cleaned and shined and they're well prepared, but I anticipate them hanging up soon in my home, but they aren't yet.
That'd be great. Or office. So other people.
Our office. I don't know. That would be great too. Yep. I do bring them into our hospital though, when I have brought them in for events and different things. So to share with patients and different activities. Yeah.
What is something that people may not expect, or a fun fact about being in the Olympics?
I think one thing that really, I think this is just the term. So the Paralympics, for example, is what persons with disabilities compete in. And so I think a lot of folks think para means paraplegic, and it does not. It's just parallel to the Olympics. So it is very distinct from Special Olympics. It is, and it's parallel to the Olympics, meaning everything is exactly the same from venues to rules, et cetera, for the Paralympics that it is to the Olympics, but it is held 2 weeks after the Olympic Games.
Do you get to see a lot of the cities while you're there?
No. So that is one of my, on my bucket list now, is that I really, really want to go back to these venues, specifically Greece and Spain. We are very highly sequestered and we're there for a long time, but we were training, you know, we're on a very regimented training schedule and, you know, prescribed and things like that, that we did not have a lot of sightseeing opportunities, which I really do want to go back. And Barcelona was probably one of my favorite cities that I feel I missed the experience of the city.
So today you are the director of pharmacy for our West region, and we're the nation's largest provider of inpatient rehabilitation. Why was rehabilitation a perfect fit for you? And tell us a little bit more about your role now.
You know, and I've given a lot of thought to this, and I've shared this with other pharmacists and directors in the West region, but I started with Encompass Health back in the day when it was Health South, but as a PRN pharmacist. So, I mean, this is really a great success story for our company. You know, as a person with disabilities starting out and a pharmacist and starting out as a PRN role, and then now X number of years later as a regional pharmacy director. So I think that says a lot for our organization. Mm-hmm. And the development and the opportunities that we have available. When I first started with our company, it was in Tucson, and, you know, the environment, the accessibility, the mindset, the how to say yes, it is, you know, what I look for in a career, you know, both fulfillment as a practicing pharmacy, but also the accessibility and what our mission is about, getting people back to work, to play. It's living that day to day. So it's just for me, just, you know, every day I enjoy what I do, if it's not specifically related to pharmacy and drugs with patients, it is also that interacting, being the role model, being the mentor with patients. I've done many demonstrations of transfers and all those motivating things that, you know, you do what patients need you to do because it's the right thing to do and it's what we do and it is our mission.
So it sounds like the challenges you faced help create a better connection with your patients.
Absolutely. And I want them to have that same experience. You know, I want them to have not have anybody saying no or that's not possible. So I feel my day-to-day visibility, my day-to-day interactions with patients as well as staff, you know, just furthers along what rehabilitation is and what we are out to accomplish every day.
You've had curveballs thrown at you, but you were really able to excel through that. What advice would you have for others?
I think it, you know, my advice is to others is that, you know, really be clear and grounded in what's right for you. And taking a step back, think about it. And, you know, when someone says no, or, you know, this is the way it has to go, there's really ways to problem solve. And I think, you know, don't be stopped. Don't be stopped by that. You know, there's always the next door. There's always the next opportunity. And it might not look the way you thought it would look right off the bat, but there is definitely a way through it and forward and to achieve and excel at it.
Yeah. Earlier you said, figure out a way to say yes.
Yep. I love that phrase. I know in our marketing teams, we always, you know, when we're admitting patients, that's our motto. You know, from a pharmacy perspective, it's always figuring out a way to say yes to admit patients, but it's a true life motto for me. And I think it fits. It's always figuring out how to say yes. And that, and, you know, goes with our employees' interactions, our patient interactions, ourself and our personal. Definitely always figure out a way to say yes.
Renee, thank you so much for being on the podcast and telling us about your story. You're just so impressive and so inspirational. I appreciate you and appreciate our listeners.
Thank you so much. It's been very enjoyable.
For those who joined us for this episode of Connect, thank you. We hope you'll stay tuned for our next episode